This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. The Centers for Disease Control rank Ohio and Kentucky in the top five for highest overdose death rate, with heroin and prescription pain relievers like fentanyl responsible for a majority of those deaths. This afternoon, we'll look at efforts to fight the local heroin epidemic on both sides of the river. Joining me first, Hamilton County Public Health Commissioner Tim Ingram, President and Addiction Treatment Specialist at Brightview and University of Cincinnati Department of Emergency Medicine Assistant Professor Dr. Sean Ryan, and Newtown Police Chief and Head of the Prevention Segment of the Hamilton County Heroin Coalition, Chief Tom Sinan. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Sean, Tim, and Tom, thank you for being here this afternoon.
Thanks for having us.
Yes.
Tim, how widespread and how serious is the heroin problem that Cincinnati is facing?
Oh, it's widespread. It's we clearly are in an epidemic, and we're not alone. Every other day in Hamilton County, somebody is dying of a drug overdose. In Ohio, there's six people a day, on average, dying of drug overdoses. Ohio also leads the nation in the number one for fentanyl-related deaths, too, which is a compound that they're mixing with heroin, lacing with heroin. So we've got a huge problem here.
Now, what's led us to the point of this becoming an epidemic, Sean?
It's very complicated and multifactorial. You know, it started really with a significant uptick in the prescription opioid use, the use of Vicodin and Percocet broadly across both in the medical field as well as non-medical uses of those. And then there were, some factors related with the drug trade and the Mexican cartel, who have figured out that not only this region but throughout our country we have a significant dependence on opioids in general. And there are a lot of other factors. It's actually a very long story, best portrayed by Sam Kinone's book Dreamland, if anyone's curious. But it's a really complicated set of issues that have led us to this epidemic.
I was going to say the cartels are good business people, unfortunately. They picked up on an opiate-addicted society. They knew where it was going on, and they took advantage of it. And now we're playing catch-up.
Tom, what about fentanyl? That's something that's relatively new, at least to me it is. What is this?
Well, fentanyl is, they probably describe it better as far as the medical field, but they're using it they're mixing it with heroin. A lot of times heroin is cut, or other drugs are cut with other items. The fentanyl, and this is my issue with what is going on with the heroin dealers and why I think we should be stricter on the penalty side, not necessarily the medical side, is not only is heroin extremely addictive, but so is fentanyl. But it's extremely deadly. And the problem is that we have no clue how much fentanyl they're putting into this heroin. So you may be getting straight fentanyl. You may be getting 60% fentanyl, 80% fentanyl. Who knows? So the problem is that not only are you taking heroin, but you're taking fentanyl. And the Narcan that we've been prescribed from the Board of Health, that you have the first responders, that doesn't work as well with when fentanyl's in use. So we're seeing some issues with that where people aren't recovering as quickly, or the overdose deaths are increasing because we're having trouble recovering from the fentanyl that's being used.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation. So, Tim, this additive is very, very dangerous, it sounds.
Yeah, the fentanyl is actually it's and Dr. Ryan can talk about it a little bit more. It's been in use in ORs for pain relief and so forth for years. But the fentanyl that we're seeing on the street, as Chief Sinan was talking about, is we pretty much know it's coming from, well, we think we're coming south of the border from clandestine labs. And so they have now are manufacturing in a way that's cheap, and as the Chief Sinan said, it's very addictive. And the issue you have, though, is that if you have a person that has this disease of the brain, this, of addiction, and they've been used to using a certain dose of heroin to help, fix themselves to be somewhat normal for that day because they have this disease. Now they add fentanyl on it, and they think it's the same size dose. That's when we're starting to see more and more drug overdoses because the fentanyl is so much more powerful.
Yeah, as Tim brought up, fentanyl has been an opioid in use in medical system for a very long time for pain relief and for operative intervention, et cetera. There's a lot of reasons the drug dealers have chosen to use it, but it's often cost. So it can be found sometimes cheaper than heroin, depending on how it's synthesized and transported to the country, whether that's from south of the border or from Asia. The complexities of the issue, as Chief Sinan said, it's become challenging to treat the patients, both from an overdose perspective with potentially the need for more Narcan, as well as how it resides in their system. So on the treatment side, we're actually having a little bit more trouble with the detoxification of those patients because fentanyl has a different pharmacologic profile than heroin. So it's presenting a lot of different challenges. And let me not forget to say that a lot of the dealers have come to understand that fentanyl can be just as, if not more, addictive than the heroin, and the patients with the disease of addiction, they really they kind of know the difference in the way that it makes them feel, and so there's a lot of different issues going on with why the fentanyl is being used, all of them bad in general.
What are the costs to the community from this epidemic, Tim?
Oh my goodness, we're all vulnerable. We all know somebody in our circle of family or friends that's had this issue. It destroys families. It causes crime. There's huge societal costs, just relative to just not the enforcement costs to try to prevent these robberies and so forth. I mean, it has just talk to anyone who's had to deal with this personally, and the stories just come out. They all bring us to tears. And it has just truly, it's destroying our communities. And that's why we're so interested in trying to do something to try to turn this tide.
Are there any communities in the Cincinnati area that are particularly hard hit by this?
Yes, we know we're mapping where these overdoses are occurring. We're mapping where these fentanyl-related deaths are occurring and so forth. Every community has some. Okay, but if you look at it, a lot of it is out among the rim of in our suburbs, along the 275 beltway and so forth. But every community's is vulnerable to this, and they've all had some experiences with drug overdoses and deaths, which has destroyed the fabric of the family and sometimes the community itself.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join us, and let's talk with April in Walnut Hills. Hi, April.
Hello, how are you?
Good, thank you.
That's good. My question, I kind of reformulated it after listening to the comments that were just made. If you were able to speak with Michael Botticelli, what would you ask him to do for you? What do you need? What resources would you say that you needed from him in order to make you more effective with what you're trying to do? Would you want him to focus more on treatment and making resources more available to people who have these addictions and removing the stigma attached to it? Or would you want him to find other ways that you can help deal with addicts who are trying to get off of the addiction? I know, is it naloxone? Is that something that's available to you? So I was just interested in those things.
So what would you ask the new drug czar for?
So this is Dr. Sean Ryan. I've actually met with and spoken with Director Botticelli on a number of things, and he is actually making a lot of significant and meaningful movements, both on the stigma of the disease. He fights that very hard, as well as a focus on treatment. We, probably the first and foremost focus we need to be paying attention to right now is the expansion of treatment services in our community. But he doesn't also, and I would agree with his perspective that we don't need to let that take away from the prevention aspect of this as well. So, if you follow Director Botticelli, my personal opinion, as an addiction, board certified addiction specialist, I support basically everything that I've seen him do so far, and wouldn't really request that he change his focus in any way for our community specifically.
I know from a law enforcement perspective, we were just talking about this. It would be nice to have more treatment, more beds available. I had a mother come in last week looking for help, and it's hard to have that person. There's a small time frame, a small window where people are ready to go in, and we don't want to lose that window, and we're losing it right now. So it'd be nice to have more treatments, more beds available that we could just get somebody, take them down, and get them at least started.
Well, I would agree. I mean, treatment capacity is one of the limiting factors in our community, and we're not unique in that regard. The commissioners, the Board of County Commissioners, formed this Hamilton County Heroin Coalition, and you've already heard how complicated this disease and this use of opiates is, and how it's causing all this pain in our society, if you will. So they actually created, we've been looking at prevention tactics, supply reduction, treatment, and also harm reduction. So every one of those plays a role in trying to curb this epidemic.
Harm reduction, Tim, what does that cover?
Well, harm reduction is really dealing with, as folks have this this disease of addiction, and they're using obviously needles and IV drug use to every day. Many times they are sharing these needles, and as a result, we're seeing our hepatitis numbers, especially C and B, increasing in Hamilton County and actually across I think pretty much across the region. The other thing is we don't want to forget what happened in Scotts County, Indiana, last year, and where one index case of HIV, and people actually crushing up a pharmaceutical pain med known as Opana. And by the time that was all said and done, and 7 to 8 months later, there was almost 200 cases of HIV in a small town under 5,000 population.
Wow. 513-419-7100. Let's go to Ron in Delhi. Hi, Ron.
Hello. Yeah, my question or comment, if you want to take it either way, is I think I've read a number of studies that they say that there's a correlation between early alcohol and tobacco abuse, and which causes changes in the brain, making it more likely the person will become addicted to another substance. Do you think that has an effect on the drug abuse epidemic that we're seeing, where people are more likely to abuse because their brains have been changed by abusing alcohol and tobacco, which is readily available to young people?
Absolutely, yes. So the studies have demonstrated exactly what you're saying, and this same question was asked of me in Coleraine the other night. You know, do I think marijuana is the gateway drug? Well, the answer is actually any mind-altering substance used in adolescence can change the brain chemistry, sometimes temporarily, sometimes permanently, and predispose those individuals towards addiction later in life. So as part of the prevention efforts, helping our adolescents to avoid any mind-altering substance is a big part of what we need to do to stem the tide of this issue we're dealing with.
And we'll continue our conversation about efforts to fight the local heroin epidemic. You can join us at 513-419-7100. You can also email talk at wvxu.org. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney. My guest this afternoon, Hamilton County Public Health Commissioner Tim Ingram, President and Addiction Treatment Specialist at Brightview and University of Cincinnati Department of Emergency Medicine Assistant Professor Dr. Sean Ryan, and Newtown Police Chief and Head of the Prevention Segment of the Hamilton County Heroin Coalition, Tom Sinan. We're talking about dealing with the heroin epidemic in the Cincinnati area, and later we'll look at how Northern Kentucky is fighting it. And you can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Tom, is this something that we can, I've heard this expression used quite often, but is this something we can arrest our way out of?
No, we can't arrest our way out of it. I mean, look who I'm sitting with. I'm sitting with a health commissioner and a physician, and both of them were instrumental. I mean, Sean helped us form the task force and helped with the setting up the coalition. So that's the first person we reached out to. So it shows you this. People ask me, what's so different about heroin and crack, and why is this different than the other drugs? Well, this is why. The medical aspect of this, and I think it's changed our philosophy in law enforcement. We've had to look at this a different way, and we have to have the help from the medical community. But I also got to say there's a lot of bad stuff, and I've been trying to put out this message, not only humanizing this issue, but that I think there is hope. And with all the people that are in place, this is out in the public. We're talking about it. A lot of people are trying new things and trying different things. And for me, I would like to see the conversation shift from this all the bad stuff to, hey, we've got some foundation in place. Now let's start looking towards the future. And we got the right people at the right place at the right time. And now we can start making some headway in this.
What do you think that lawmakers in Ohio and Kentucky are looking at making the penalties harsher for dealing in heroin? What do you think of that?
Well, you know, there's always this debate, and I get this a lot because I am very much in favor of stronger penalties for the dealer. But I always get the debate and the pushback, what about the user? I understand the addiction part of it, especially working with these gentlemen. I have a better understanding of the addiction, so I have more empathy on that end. I'm sure there are users that are dealing, and I'm not going to be naive and say there's not. But I would say a large portion of the dealers aren't generally your addicts, especially when you're talking about the cartels, especially when you're talking about the gangs, especially when you're talking about those people pushing out a gram or a half gram. To me, those people know that heroin is addictive. They know we have an epidemic going on, and then they're intentionally mixing it with something where someone could die. To me, they should have stiffer penalties. On the treatment end, I get that. Let's work on treatment. Here's what we're going to have to do as a society. We're going to have to start figuring out who we want in jail and who should not be in jail. Is that user, should they be in jail or should they be in treatment? I understand there's not room for both, but we're going to start making that decision, and we're going to have that discussion and figure out where we put people. But on my end, the dealer should have stiffer penalties.
It's well said. You know, it's we got lots of complicated issues in our society. We know our jails are full. Building bigger jails for this type of purpose, especially if they're full of users and not suppliers, clearly is something that we as a society should have a discussion on. You know, the other thing that I've brought up a couple times, and it's just as controversial, is when fentanyl's on the street, it would be probably really interesting if we could have a way to get that tested, to let people, without fear of arrest, so that people would know, hey, fentanyl's on the street with heroin, you know, you got to be careful, you shouldn't be using this same size of dose and so forth. I mean, really, we're trying to protect these folks from ruining their lives completely or killing themselves or adding to more cost to society. Turning away from this problem and not looking at face in its face is not the right strategy. We have to face it, and we have to understand that it's that although it's complex, we can actually solve it if we work all together on this.
Tim, how recent is fentanyl? I mean, is that something that they just recently started mixing in, or has that been going on for quite some time?
Well, we became more and more aware of it about 3 years ago, and it's been doubling almost every year on fentanyl-related deaths. And let me just say, although we're focused on opium, you know, opiates, you know, in general. It's just not heroin, but opiates. But, you know, they're also now we're finding fentanyl being mixed with cocaine. You know, there used to be an old term back in the that you hear called speedballs, where, you know, and at that time they used to take heroin and meth. Now they're using fentanyl cocaine or fentanyl meth. I mean, this fentanyl is kind of the new drug on the street, if you will, but it just didn't show up last night.
513-419-7100. Let's talk with Taylor in Fort Thomas. Hi, Taylor.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
I just wanted to make a quick comment. As someone who's been in recovery for a little over 3 years, I think promotion of recovery is so key. I mean, it has been in my recovery, and I know a lot of young women that it has been so key, especially, you know, I'm 24 and I've been sober a little over 3 years, and the amount of young women that have come to me like, wow, you know, the hope that is given when other people share their story is just, you know, it's I don't even know the word, it's just so inspiring. And I know that's how it's been in my story.
Taylor, thank you.
And I agree with Tom as well as Taylor. I think that demonstrating those successes and those stories of recovery are key and critical to us making a community move on this. I think we can't speak you know, enough about the impact across the community, both the health and wellness of the community, the moral and financial impact. You know, we've got entire industries at this point, they're having struggles with employment. So the restaurant industry, for example, I have friends that work as executives in different restaurant chains around our community, some of those that are based in our area, who are struggling to find employees that can stay sober long enough to work. So the impact is so broad-reaching, including what Taylor is saying. You know, we really do have to portray the potential positive of people getting into recovery, getting back to work, and being positive and meaningful and contributing members of our community.
Congratulations, Taylor. And yeah. To tie off of what Sean says, that's part of the thing. People don't hear those stories, and they think that – and look, the three of us aren't going to sit here and kid you. I mean, we're out here in the public talking about the good, the bad, and the ugly, and we want to tell you all of it. And there is some good. Every time you turn on the news, there's a bad story, and I get it, and it's horrible, and it's heartbreaking. But there are stories, and like Taylor said, they're inspirational. And I think if we get those stories out, people will see that they have hope. And if they have hope, then they go to treatment. If they have hope, then maybe they tell us where the drugs are being sold. If they have hope, then maybe they stay. And I was trying to think of a different word because Sean was talking. I didn't like the word treatment. But if they stay in treatment and then prevention afterwards, then we can solve this.
Just for clarification, it's not the word, you know, treatment is a very positive, should be a very positive term in general. Part of my concerns are that people, to some extent, equate all treatment as equal. And that's my real concern. Not all treatment is equal. There's new evidence-based medical treatments with associated, wraparound social services. Those kind of programs should be lauded and held up as the next best way. But all treatment is not created equal.
And actually, this is a community effort. From the very beginning on the street until they get through that treatment and that prevention in the end, it's going to take the whole community working together to keep them off those, off the drugs.
Absolutely.
Yeah. We had a call from Mort, and he was wondering about the very harsh drug penalties that they have in some other countries. If they would have any effect here if we had this?
I don't know. It's society dictates that kind of stuff, and I can sit here and talk about my personal opinion, but my personal opinion isn't dictating society. So I don't know what works and what necessarily doesn't work. I know what we've been doing in the past hasn't worked, and I know it's strange to hear from law enforcement, but the war on drugs hasn't worked, zero tolerance hasn't worked, and I think we're trying some different things. And I think it's okay to try those things, and I think it's okay to fail, and if we fail, we admit it, and let's try something different. I think it's where we're at right now.
That's well said. I agree with that. I mean, we know what we've been doing in the past isn't working, so we got to try a different process, and this is a different multi-prong approach to it. It's just not one area, but the bottom line is we know we need more treatment capacity, as Dr. Ryan was talking about.
513-419-7100 to join us, and let's talk with James in Mainville. Hi, James.
Hello. I'm a 60-some-odd-year-old physician who's been practicing in this area for 30-plus years, and I'd like to ask the panel about the experiences with Paraguay and Portugal with decriminalization of small amounts of cocaine, heroin, marijuana, et cetera. My understanding is that although it hasn't radically changed the amount of drug usage, that the comorbidities of things like STDs and overdose deaths, crime, et cetera, have been drastically reduced. Do you have any comments on this?
Wow. every time I get one of those, it's complicated. Again, I don't know what is going to work and what's not going to work. I will say that this has been brought up in some of the discussions and talks we have out in the public, and you're talking about a huge shift in society, and especially the way we look at it here in this country with drugs and penalization. So I don't know what that answer is, and I don't know if society would necessarily go for that. It's been brought up in other countries in Europe where they've legalized it and crime has gone down and other issues have gone down. I don't know if we would do that here in this country or not, and to be honest with you, that's a shift in society. I just know a lot of good people are dying both on the addiction end and from the law enforcement, and we've lost a lot of police officers in this war on drugs too. So I think these types of things need to be out in the public. We need to discuss them, and we need to have an open debate about them. An open mind.
Now, I wondered, Kroger and CVS are starting to offer the heroin overdose antidote, Narcan and Naloxone, as an over-the-counter, without a prescription kind of drug. How much is that going to help in this? What do you see the impact of that being, Sean?
Let's not forget Walgreens. So
Walgreens three, also, right, so we've got
all,
three now.
All three of the big pharmacies.
So this is greatly expanded from what it used to be.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And let's also not forget our community pharmacies who have definitely stepped up. Some of the private community pharmacies have stepped into that foray. I think it's a part of the naloxone distribution efforts that Tim and I have been working on and with Tom and the police force. That's going to help. So you're going to have, the parents of users, probably less users than people would think, actually going in and seeking their own, reversal drug. But probably parents and friends and loved ones of users when they can't seem to get them into treatment and they want to have that kind of last resort, unfortunately, they're going to go in and get these medications without having to seek it. But I think that's one part of a multifaceted approach to get naloxone into the community, just like we see AEDs everywhere for heart attacks. That's how we really ought to view naloxone. We are obviously inundated as a community with this issue, just as we are with heart disease, so we should approach it in that light.
And the other thing that Chief Simon was talking about, based on the caller from Mainville, it took legislative action to get through House Bill 4, I think it was, that actually got naloxone available in these pharmacies without a prescription. And so since it's been used for years, it was safe, it was studied a lot, but a lot of people, there was a lot of debate on that question. But we're past that one, and perhaps there'll be future debates ahead, because obviously this problem's been around for a while.
The Narcan issue with law enforcement, we get some debate on this, but when we sat on the coalition to discuss this, this was the easiest answer for me. As complex as this issue is, this was so easy. It's about saving lives. And when you're standing over an overdose victim, I want people to remember that you're standing next to a family member that's grieving. That's a husband, a wife, a mother, a father, a son, or a daughter that's there. And you're dealing with that family member. And if we can give them one more chance that maybe they do get into treatment, one more day of hope, or if nothing else, one more day that they don't have to grieve, then I'm all for it. And the Narcan, especially on the law enforcement end, was the easiest decision we made.
Sean, Tim, and Tom, thanks so much for joining me this afternoon.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Hamilton County Public Health Commissioner Tim Ingram, President and Addiction Treatment Specialist at Brightview, and University of Cincinnati Department of Emergency Medicine Assistant Professor Dr. Sean Ryan, and Newtown Police Chief and Head of the Prevention Segment of the Hamilton County Heroin Coalition, Tom Sinan.